witam Cię bardzo serdecznie w 15 odcinku podcastu Dostarczaj Wartość. Dziś wraz z Michel Westerlaken oraz Łukaszem Januszkiem porozmawiamy o tym, czy warto zmienić swoje podejście do procesu projektowania uwzględniając zwierzęta i ich potrzeby oraz czego możemy się od nich nauczyć. Ja nazywam się Bartosz Michalski i zapraszam Cię do wysłuchania podcastu.
Our guest is Michel Westerlaken, PhD student, but most important thing I can say that she's changing a way that things being designed using animals, introducing things that normally we won't be thinking about, like multi-species. So we'll be asking her about how those kind of things can change our way of thinking about designing and how this will change our approach. Let me first ask introductionary question. What is most awesome, amazing, and useful thing you are currently doing or you have done in your job?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me on this talk. I'm very happy to be here in Poland to be part of this conference and this podcast as well. I think what I like most about my work is that I can combine something that is very valuable to me, which is like our relationship with other animals. I think we have really messed up as society the way that we treat other animals and the way that we see them as kind of like a subclass of species. And I think it's awesome that I can contribute to that with my research, that I can try to challenge this position, which is inherently like anthropocentric, so inherently centering the human. And I want to see it as a wider viewpoint in which other animals are not necessarily like a lower class than us, but we can see them as equally morally worthy. And to be able to do that through my work, that is, and through my research, that is really, really cool, I think. And on a practical side, that also means that I have been involved in some design projects in which I was like literally trying to negotiate with other animals, like how can we design something together? And of course, that is like the very practical, nice thing that I like about my work, is to be able to, yeah, work with other animals and not only like for them or talk about them, but actually do things with them in the field of design.
My first question would be, why we need to change our current approach? Why our anthropomorphic approach is bad, and what we can get from including animals and thinking not of them as something add-on, but something that is main element of designing things.
So I think for this, we need to travel back a little bit in time, specifically like the starting point of like modernism or like enlightenment rational thought, where we had like philosopher like René Descartes, who was saying, well, you know, animals, they are like machines. They don't have like emotions or feelings or something. They just carry out certain logics and certain like instinctual ways of being. And from there on, like philosophers later have kind of built onto this and expanded this. Whereas nowadays we have found that actually many other animals have very like a lot of similarities with humans. And I think one of the words that is central to this is the term speciesism, which is a term that was popularized by like an ethicist, Peter Singer, Australian ethicist. And he wrote this book in 1975 called Animal Liberation. And here he was making the case like very clearly, like why are animals actually seen as less valuable than humans? What is the reason for this, right? If we treat other humans, like if we don't decide the moral value of other humans based on their like intelligence or their capabilities, like we don't treat children as less morally worthy than adults, for example, right? And so he was putting with the notion of speciesism, so discrimination based on the grounds of belonging to a certain species, he was putting this like as a form of oppression based on, like next to other forms of oppressions, like we have racism, classism, sexism, things like this. So he wanted to make that case. And I think this is a valuable like starting point to look at it, because then as soon as we start to break down those hierarchies or those ways of thinking that we basically take for granted, that we have been, you know, through our culture, through our society, we have been learning, no, but animals are not like not as valuable as humans. You know, they are essentially like killable or exploitable by humans, and this is okay. But if we start questioning that, pretty much very soon all our reasons for this start to break down, at least in my reading of these terms, right? And then I think what becomes then the follow-up question for a designer looking at this in a, like, rather than trying to understand the past, maybe trying to see what can we actually do with this, right? What kind of possibilities can we create with this? Then a designer is starting to ask, okay, but what does that actually mean then? How do we think about a world that is not speciesist? How do we think about a world that is multi-species, that takes into account all kinds of different animals? And I think design can play a very crucial role in this, for people to think about, like, what do those futures actually look like?
Could you give me an example when both sides, human and animal side, are beneficial from this changing approach? When you are talking about including animals, the first thing I was thinking about is testing on animals. We are also including animals in worst possible way of thinking into the process of designing drugs or designing things. But here we are talking about different way, different approach, when both sides can be beneficial. So I'm searching for those examples in which this kind of approach is better.
I think that I would, rather than saying like if there's something beneficial to the way in which we relate, I would try to move away from like only having like a use case for this. So I would rather think of like relationships that we have with other animals, that in which we are like meeting each other on an equal ground, which is rarely when we actually want to make use of other animals, right? So instead of saying like, where can we use the animal in a beneficial way, both for the animal and the human, I would say like, where can we meet the other animal on equal ground? And I think one example that we can go into here, which I have found very interesting because I have a background in game design, which is when we meet another animal in playful interaction. So when we actually play with an animal, because I think playfulness is one of those cases where you cannot really force the other animal to play with you, right? You can put them in a cage and keep them there, but when they were not interested in playing with you, they wouldn't join your playful interaction. So this is, I think, one example, maybe as a starting point also for design, to think about like, how can we shape playfulness between animals and humans from a non-speciesist perspective? And maybe I can give an example of like a project in this, of like other researchers that have been working with this. So one, I think, very challenging case was an example of a research project that has been carried out in the Netherlands by Wageningen University and HKU in Utrecht. And they were involved in a project like Playing with Pigs, it was called. And here they were trying to follow, they started out by following like a European guideline that said that, well, to do pig farming these days, you must have like the shed of the pig needs to have toys inside of it. Because these pigs, you know, they found like a lot of research, like these pigs are getting very bored, they're biting each other's tails off, so you need to provide toys now for them. And then there were a couple of like game designers that were like, but maybe we can make something that is more interesting for the pigs than just like a simple chain or something that they can play with. So they started to make a prototype for a video game that you could play with a pig, essentially in a shed. So it was like a tablet game, and it was connected to like a big glass wand that was placed in the shed. And there was a game, kind of like a collaborative game that they had to do. And this was a prototype. So they made a mock-up video and they put that online, and it looked as if the pigs were really playing with this toy, right? Even though it was a prototype mock-up. And then people started reacting to this, and the reactions were very, very different, because some people said, you should be in this cage and then we play a game with you and see how you feel about this, right? Which was like a one extreme. And the other people say, well, I think this is great, like we can play with our own meat, we, you know, this is like a better way for the pigs to spend time together. So we can see that there's this broad range of and everything in between, right? Very broad range of reaction, because in this project nobody's really questioning if this pig should be in a shed and should be farmed to begin with, right? That is already like an assumption from this EU guideline that it's okay to farm other animals. So they were trying to go towards like a new like idea, but at the same time they were revealing a lot of like the absurdity of this whole context of having another animal in a farm and playing games with them.
Three key points I have heard from what you have said up to this point are more or less like this. The first one would be something like this: playfulness. The fact that playfulness helps, the fact that you are interacting, you are creating interactions with the animals in terms of having fun, in terms of playing, etc. This very fact means that animals are not just organic robots. They are more than just a set of instincts. And trying to pragmatize it, because I put everything in the context of, let's say, how can a person use something, use the learned knowledge? I hear things related, for example, pets playing with children, or rehabilitation, or, for example, helping people adapt to something new. I hear echoes of this somewhere in what you have said, that this line of research may be very helpful and valuable, especially when we put humans in environments alien to them, or, for example, in rehabilitation.
I think there are also some examples in which rehabilitation or other kind of like relationship in which humans and animals are helping each other could be named. There is a whole field called animal-computer interaction, which is like a research field that is adapted from like the human-computer interaction field, where of course also people started questioning like if we research technology for humans as users, why can't we research that for animals as well? So here we have examples of, for example, assistant dogs. So dogs that are living with somebody that has a certain disability, and they are taught to help this person out, right? And there people have been thinking about like the kinds of interactions that these dogs have to deal with on an everyday basis, like simple things like turning on the lights, turning on the washing machine, or calling for help in case an emergency happens, and what kind of technology can actually help the animal here to do their job. But still, you know, we might see here, like, why is the animal in that position, or why is the animal asked to do this job in the first place, right? Because that's still a thing that's controlled by the human at the end of the day. So I think we need to keep asking these questions, but at the same time, in design, we need to also keep creating possibilities to think with these questions.
The very fact you are designing things for animals means that we are expanding our pool of design concepts. We are expanding our pool of design language, of design ideas. Because, for example, a dog who really loves their owner would like to call for help if the dog understood how and when and what the help means in this particular scenario. And as I understand, this is connected to your research, to your approach. Also, it seems to me that your research also helps us expand human-computer interactions in terms of, let's say, less neurotypical people, or in terms of different communication interfaces, so people with some disabilities. So in other words, this area of study greatly expands our understanding on interaction itself and on the role of interaction and design in perceiving and connecting.
I think not only that, I think it also expands the stakeholders who are part of a process or part of an interaction in general. So where usually we have meant, like, if we say human-computer interaction, the human user traditionally has been this able-bodied, white, perhaps even male user that is like taken as the standard in interaction design, right? But the more we start to expand this to include other humans and other animals, then the more like inclusive this field starts to become. Of course, when we broaden it from humans to other animals, and then of course we start also broadening it toward other species more, even broader, right? We can think also about like plant life and bacteria and other kinds of like organisms, like living entities in general, for example, that can become part of, because they are already part of our interactions, right? It's not like they haven't been. They have always been a part of, they were always impacted by the technologies that we designed, right? If we start to see that more broadly, that they are in fact impact, that we can in fact design for these other entities, then we are broadening our perspectives, yeah.
Trying to understand on vision level, so where this could technically go, for example. Case like this, humans are, for example, trying to repopulate the forests to, let's say, restore parts of the nature, but we are doing it using, you know, central planning, our knowledge of reality, and more or less fails. But from what I'm hearing is that expansion of knowledge in this area means that possibly after introducing different species to the environment like this, plants of different type, the end game of the research could, for example, be that the plants themselves would be able to communicate and sustain, to inform, we are lacking X, therefore X needs to be delivered if we are to actually repopulate this area.
I see that, but I don't necessarily agree with this, because I think that this takes also a bigger like anthropocentric idea of what we can do with design and technology, because I think we should start to see the idea of withdrawal as part of like a design process. We can say like, we have gotten ourselves in, like on a planetary scale, we've gotten ourselves into this sustainability issue through like a large part of this was actually design, right? We have designed ourselves into this thing, right? So to assume that we can also design ourselves out of this is essentially still like an anthropocentric position in which we say, okay, we humans, we are going to solve the problem now that we have in fact created, right? So if we do more innovation, more technology, more design, maybe that's not necessarily the best way to go. And therefore, I think that we can say, well, design is a design decision is also to decide not to do something, right? So we can also design to ways to step out of our interference, for example, in forests, and perhaps let them grow, because ecosystems are also kind of systems that take care of themselves, right? If we don't interfere, they can restore themselves like remarkably fast. And here, so we can see design also as like stepping away, and deciding not to interfere is also a design decision. And in that sense, we can say also that other species do that, right? Other species design, you know, forests. We can see them on some kind of like abstract level as also entities that regulate themselves, right?
Sometimes it's better not to interfere. Sometimes it's better to avoid interacting, because every interaction changes the system. And sometimes it's better to let the system recover on its own, regenerate on its own, than to interact and damage whatever is trying to recover on its own. Let's see a person, I don't know, a programmer who's working in a company, or a person, for example, in HR who is trying to recruit people, or a manager of a small team. What can they learn from your research? What can they use to get, let's say, practical value so they are motivated to do that?
I think first thing to note here is that everybody has interactions with other animals or other species, right? Maybe you don't like really animals, you want to interact with plants, that's also okay to me. So we are meeting other animals every day. Some of them are alive and some of them are dead, right? We can also see that it's not always living species, right? And so you are actually already involved in a continuous like negotiation with other species. So all of these decisions that you make on a daily basis essentially are something to take into account. And therefore, I think that everybody has some experience with designing with other animals in some ways, if we look at it in that more like everyday level. So I think that many people have experience with, you know, playing with their dog or with their cat at home, or other like domestic animals that there are, or seeing animals in the wild. I think especially the case of urban animals. So the way in which we interact with other animals in cities, for example, on an everyday basis is a highly designed environment where we meet other animals. So I think to start to question how design and technology has shaped these interactions, you know, how are public spaces designed to accommodate or keep these animals out? How are they designed to manage the population or manage our ways of meeting these other animals? How is your own private living space designed to be, you know, to be accommodating for another animal? And what kind of changes can you make for the other animals in your home? And I think that this is a very exciting thing to look at, because once you start to try to see the other animal as actually like making use of a lot of technologies or a lot of things that we have designed as a user, it really changes the perspective of how we do design with other animals.
Well, let's say a person has a cat. I know he closes door so the cat can't come, can't go. And then the guy is irritated. Oh, why my cat is peeing everywhere? Why my cat doesn't really act like that other cat who's that nice? And the person doesn't see that his own actions made the cat do this, because the level of constraints and stress change to the cat.
That could be an example, sure.
So in terms of an impact the person could do, instead of trying to model the cat or mold the cat like the machine, so program the cat, adapt to how the cat sees the world, how the cat thinks, and move a bit, adapt a bit, so they both gain. So the cat has the companions, the human companion, whom the cat can love, can play with from time to time, and the human has the cat who doesn't act wrong, let's say, in human opinion, and who still is a companion, not just an animal living in the same house. Also, I think it has a lot to do with toy design for animals. Am I right?
There is, and I think this is a huge field. I think especially the domestic animal industry, by which I mean like basically pets, like animals living in our home, that's a very large design industry. I think it's bigger than like the gaming industry and the music industry combined or something like this, right? People are prepared to spend insane amounts of money on their pet. So therefore, there is a design industry there. But I also think that we can do much more. Like now, when you go to a shop where you can buy pets for toys, they pretty much look like copy paste from each other, right? And so I think there's a lot of stuff to do there. And especially when we start to take like this wider idea of less anthropocentric and more like multi-species design, then I think we can gain a lot of things there. But of course, again, we can still question the basic premise. Why is this animal in our home, right? What kind of interaction am I trying to have here with this animal? Like, we have actively bought this animal or gotten this animal, or we've been breeding these animals and domesticating them. So we should also ask those bigger questions of what are we trying to gain from this? And is this really a fair thing to be wanting from another animal? And I'm not saying that like right now we need to get rid of all our pets by that. I think they are already there and they will be there, I think, in the future as well. But we can at least try to widen this understanding, right, of why these animals are here.
Animals are a part of the system we have designed. It's a system we have right now. Having the system where there are people, machines, animals, and everything, we need to think what type of interaction, why do we want those animals, machines, all entities be here, and what can we do to make it happen at the least cost to every actor of this system and at the maximum gain for every actor of this system, because then we all profit the most. What would you suggest for a person who would like to start seeing where those issues, problems, opportunities you are talking about are in the local area? So for example, for a random person on the street who would like to do something, learn about it, how could that person start perceiving those things and use your methods?
I think it's a very difficult thing to do because, as I said, like this idea of speciesism is initially, it's everywhere. You know, it's in the clothes that you wear, the things that you eat, the furniture that you're sitting on, the medicine that you use. You know, it's almost in everything that we do these days. So it can be very overwhelming for people to try to see, but what can we do that is not that, right? Because you can almost like not see those things. But then I think so my main suggestion here, which is to start from very small cases. So when I started doing this research, I was like involved with designing things for other animals, like more as like a design case. Like now I'm going to design this toy or this game here for this other animal. And that was like a kind of project. But then at the same time, I started to try to find like examples of very small scenarios that we have in the world right now, like the everyday world, where we actually meet other animals in a non-speciesist or a multi-species way. So I started to try to create a kind of like repertoire, or kind of like I started making like small annotations that you can also like find on my website. And I've been trying to generate like, or trying to find these small examples. So I think that would be a great way to start to see what kind of small examples you can find in your own environment where you have a relationship with other animals that are not speciesist. So one of my drawings, for example, includes like a man standing at the window, opening the window to let like a fly go out. For example, we have this moment where we see like this insect that is stuck and we could do like two things, right? We could like smash it, or we could open the window and let the fly out, right? So this is like a very like everyday thing where you can wonder like why is this happening. Another example is, for example, I have a vegan friend who has a cat, and this cat is always like bringing back home like dead birds and putting the dead bird at her feet as a kind of like gift, or I don't know why they do this, but she has perceived this as like a gift, and she doesn't want the cat to do this. She's like, why are you doing this? I'm vegan. I don't want your dead bird. Can you like keep me out of this? So this struggle, it's not necessarily a solution, but it's like a recognition that this is a struggle that we have with our domestic animals, right? Another example could be like a public space. So I have one drawing that shows like a fountain, and there is a pigeon, and there's like several water entrances of the exits of the fountain, and there's like a pigeon sleeping on one of them. And then somebody is like, let's have some drink some water at the fountain. And then somebody's like, well, okay, but let's go to the other side so we don't wake up the pigeon. So that's another like kind of small instance. So I've been trying to collect those small instances and use those kind of things as a inspiration for design, rather than try to see as this like overwhelming, you know, world of animal oppression where we can say we're never going to find our way out of this. You know, this is very overwhelming. So I think we need to start from those like small stories and everyday situations first, because I think they could be a great starting point to do design projects.
When you said you are designing toys or games for animals, how do you know which ones are better for animals than others? As in, how do you perceive which ones are better? What are criteria?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we don't have a set of UX design principles, right, to go for, because this is a very small field. We don't know what kind of interfaces dogs interact with, and then horses and penguins have other ones, right? So we don't have like guidelines for this. So we need to come up with these things, right? So one of my main points here is that I would suggest not to try to quantify these things or try to come up with general principles, because I don't think we can be there yet. I think about all the different animals that are there. We don't know, right? When we're designing, it's very experimental stuff. So what I've been trying to do in my own work, in my own project, is to design something for this one single dog that is living with me, right? I know that I have known this dog for many years. So from there, I can kind of generate, this is how this dog likes to play, and this is the kind of toy that we would like to design, and then take like small steps. So I started out with like a very small, like a kind of robotic ball, and then I tried it out, and then you know, we modified a little bit, and then again tried it out, modified a little bit. So we did this like very iterative process where we made like slow changes so that we could kind of design it almost like together, right? So that's one thing. So each case has like perhaps an individual animal and an individual user designing some individual human designing something together, rather than trying to design a toy that will work for all dogs or all penguins or all horses.
If we are designing a game or a toy for an animal, for a type of an animal, it's, well, difficult or even impossible, because at this point our knowledge is not high enough in this area. But if we are designing something for the area where our knowledge is not high enough, then it's good to start from a single case, like a single dog, then to a set of dogs of the same type, see if it still holds, see right. If it works, if the pattern is here. Then generalize, search for the moment when pattern breaks, and then ask questions why. Change, adapt, and modify.
Yeah, but I think it will be a long time before we get to like general design with other animals, I think. So I think focusing on smaller cases for now is the way to go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
It was very, very, very enlightening.
Thank you.
Thanks.